When book critic John Leonard got a copy of The Rape of the Rose by British writer Glyn Hughes, it intrigued him because it was about the Luddites. The Luddites, you may recall from their minor mention in high school history books, were bands of 19th century English craftsmen who rebelled against technology. Their goal was to destroy the textile machinery that was making their jobs obsolete. How has Hughes made the subject come alive? Splendidly, says John.
It's not as if the English novel kept its mouth shut about what happened to the working classes during the Industrial Revolution of the early 19th century. Dickens and George Eliot, Disraeli and Elizabeth Gaskell, Thomas Hardy, and even later on D.H. Lawrence had their say. But they usually said it from the point of view of the resting classes. And it's amazing how often the difficulties of their characters were resolved by a fortuitous marriage, or a miraculous inheritance, or sudden death, or immigration to Australia. No such luck for Moore, Grieve, and Mary the Scar in Glyn Hughes's remarkable novel about the Luddite Rebellion of 1812. They are poor, and they are doomed. There is at first a fairy tale quality about this novel by a poet. Moore, Grieve is a handloom weaver, a schoolmaster in the village of Ladywell in Yorkshire, and a secret scribbler of notes on nature and politics. He will flee across the moors with a violin on his back and a magic stone in his pocket. He will team up with Mary the Scar in her blue cloak with red-painted cheeks and dyed black hair, a woman of hard times and easy virtue, who taught herself to read from tombstones, the Bible, and pornography, who's heard some Mozart on the harpsichord, but who's also on the run, from a child whose hungry mouth she stopped with dirt. "You with your fiddle," says Mary to Moore, "and me with my own instrument for playing, we'll get by." But they are not allowed to. They are not allowed to because all of England's soldiers are against them, and mill owners and village spies, and the Industrial Revolution. In 1812, orphans are carted off to workhouses. Five-year-old children are indentured to satanic mills. A man can be hanged for poaching a trout or a rabbit, and a woman for stealing a shilling's worth of shoes. In one direction, from Manchester, delinquents are deported to the penal colonies. In another, troublemakers become cannon fodder for the Napoleonic Wars. In a third, slave ships leave for America. Bad enough that Moore Grieve reads books by Tom Paine. He is also the scribe for a local band of Luddites. These machine smashers have come down to us in history as mindless vandals. They emerge instead from the pages of The Rape of the Rose as radicals in the tradition of the French and American revolutions. Their rage wasn't so much at power looms or threshing machines as at the destruction of their communities by a new system of social domination. It's not an accident that England began hanging poachers at exactly the same time as its aristocratic classes took up hunting and shooting as leisure activities. No wonder artisans smashed machines in 1812, as in the 1830s, the landless unemployed would burn hayricks and demand either bread or blood and bargain collectively by riot. Nowhere in the 19th century novel did we get anything as raw as what we read here on life in the mill and the poorhouse, the brothel and the lunatic asylum. Nothing that smells so powerfully of machine oil, gunpowder, turnips, and debauchery. I won't tell you why Mary the Scar calls Moore Grieve Moore Grief, nor explain the various meanings of rose, which range from William Blake to the War of the Roses. I will say that The Rape of the Rose is the best historical novel I've read since Thomas Flanagan's The Year of the French, which was also about exalted poetry and doomed revolution.
John Leonard is media critic for CBS Sunday Morning. He reviewed The Rape of the Rose by Glyn Hughes.